Here we go. All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Friday, August 5th. I am Doug Norrie. That is James Davis. We are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get your lineups going for FanDuel and DraftKings, all the free content on the site that you could ever want, plus a free 3-day trial to our projection system, powered by Lineup Lab, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. And if I'm going fast through the beginning part of the podcast, it's only because I'm so excited to talk to James Davis on the other line. James, how's it going?
What?
What was that? I thought we talked about what the opening was going to be.
Okay.
That wasn't it. We're already off script. So we are...
Just throwing a little Chappelle Show deep tracks for
you. Yeah, great, dude. I would say, I'm going to try to wonder about what percentage of people are going to get that. I would say maybe... That's probably 45%. I don't know. That was a pretty popular show.
That's more than enough, yeah.
Anyway, we're going to talk a Friday slate of baseball. There's a lot of pretty interesting stuff going on here today. We were talking a little bit off air about the pitching situation. I was in the chat room today saying that Giancarlo Stanton facing a lefty in Coors kind of feels like sort of a holiday, something to get really excited about. So we have that going on. There's a bunch of stuff to talk about, and we can get right into it. What do you – so this is a full slate of games. It all starts at 7 tonight.
Yeah,
so everything is going to happen at once. All the decisions will be there just for us to kind of make right in the same time period. Pitching to me, though, strikes me as I'm a little confused. I don't know if you have the same sort of feeling as I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a surprisingly hairy pitching situation here tonight. We were talking a little bit off air about some of the various options and, you know, some of the pros and cons. One guy we didn't mention that I've been looking a little bit more at is Justin Verlander. You pointed out to me, rightly, that the Tigers are actually favored against the Mets in spite of Syndergaard pitching, which is not an easy thing to do. And a lot of that comes to, well, first of all, Verlander's bounce back season. He's been terrific this year. Peripherals are not back to where they used to be, like old vintage Cy Young Justin Verlander, but more than a strikeout an inning, reasonable walk rate. Been better recently, obviously, with the 11 strikeout performance, complete game against the Astros. I don't know. I could see him popping up on a lot of lists today.
Yeah. Just as a reminder, people did not hear the other guys we mentioned off the air. So you said one guy we didn't mention, but then you didn't talk about all the guys we did mention.
I'm talking about a guy we didn't mention first because I think he might be the best guy, even though we didn't mention him.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on the peripherals. It's hard to evaluate the Mets right now.
That's the second point. Yeah.
Right. They get Jay Bruce, which definitely helps the middle of their order, though Bruce isn't like some kind of savior, but he's a significant upgrade over what they were kind of throwing out there.
It's also a strikeout machine too, though.
Right, right. So their lineup is still, even with the addition of him, this is still a team that hits James Loney in and around the cleanup spot, which is basically all you need to know about a team. That when you think that James Loney is the power bat in the middle of your order. You know, they'll throw out Granderson at the top, Deaza. It's just still not a very good lineup. And I'm
I'm not quaking in my boots when I hear those names.
No.
I mean, the Mets already ninth in the league in terms of striking out against right-handed pitching too. I don't know. It strikes me as a really good matchup. Obviously, the big black mark here for cash games is with how good Syndergaard is and how deep he can go into games. It's going to be tough to secure a win. I mean, obviously the Tigers have a good lineup, especially compared to the Mets, but Syndergaard's recently been one of the guys that's pitching deeper in the games as far as aces are concerned, you know, or at least up on a pitch count basis, been pitching into the one teens, which is uncommon these days.
Yeah, that line is wholly informed by the differences in the offenses, 100%. There's because it's just the Tigers have real hitters in the middle of the lineup, and the Mets just don't. So that line is all about that. And even with that, it's at 7.5 over-under right now. I don't really see it going down necessarily, just because it's really hard to get the Tigers for under 4 runs against almost anybody. But I'm with you.
And Syndergaard's an ace's ace. I mean, he's one of the top very few pitchers in the whole league. So very weird to take a pitcher against him, especially in a cash game and especially on FanDuel where the win matters so much. But yeah, he's a guy I'm really looking at because I mean, some of the other guys we can walk through them as well. Names like Blake Snell were making an appearance. I guess. I mean, Blake Snell has 49 Ks and 49 innings, which you like, but 25 walks and 49 innings, which you don't like nearly as much. The guy just can't pitch more than 6 innings in a game because, again, the control issues are there. And with the strikeouts as well, he's just not going to go deep into games, which is going to really seriously limit his win potential.
I was saying this yesterday, too, about but it was in relation to the Indians pitchers, but it was against the Twins, so it still probably holds firm here. Yesterday, so the Twins spent 3 days just obliterating Indian pitching over, like, from, like, Sunday, or maybe, like, Monday through Wednesday or something like that, Sunday through Tuesday, where they just were putting up, you know, like, almost, like, double-digit run games. And then yesterday, they go into the game against Mike Clevinger and are, like, underdogs, which is with, like, a low run line. So I'm like, well, which is it? Is it the Twins have been lucky, or Vegas hasn't figured them out? What is the truth on the Twins? Because the run line was low, but Mike Clevinger is like, he stinks. So and they come in again as a really low run line today against Blake Snell. And I think it just is that we targeted Indian pitching against the Twins that whole series and just got lit up basically. And you can maybe just run bad. They're still not a very good team. They don't go very deep down the lineup, especially near the bottom where they have guys like Danny Santana, Jorge Polanco, Kurt Suzuki. Those guys are really not anything to be worried about.
And they tough to call them not a very good team, though, right? I mean, they are 11th in the majors in WOBA, 10th against lefties, 12th against righties.
Right. So then, which is it then? Because I'm with you in the sense that they have some guys in the team. I'm constantly confused about the run lines for them coming in into the game because it seems like it should be higher even against a guy like Blake Snell, who is, like what you said, fine, I guess. But I have him at 3.52 projected runs today, and that's really low. I know the park kind of kills him in Tampa.
Tampa underrated hit pitcher's park for sure.
All right, so we're talking about win expectancy. Because it really does.
I'm off Blake Snell now. I'm not taking him.
That was quick.
Looking at this more closely, I don't. There's something goofy on that Vegas line for me. This feels wrong.
Yeah, and I said same thing I said yesterday. Although Clevinger wasn't terrible, all things considered. But all right. So the two highest money line guys right now are Jaime Garcia coming in at somewhere around -240. Against the Braves, and then the other guy was Lester, I think, at right around -200. So that's kind of shifted around from last night to the morning, but it's going to probably stick in that -200 range against the A's.
Sure.
Those guys, where the win is so important on FanDuel, especially. It's important on DraftKings also, but much more important on FanDuel. And pitcher wins are pretty correlated to money lines, all things considered, or about as correlated as any other stat that you're going to get going into a matchup when you're trying to be predictive. Of those two guys, can you see yourself throwing either of them out in cash games, maybe for like the win safety or just that their matchups are sort of juicy?
If again, we're talking on FanDuel, I'm not going to play Jaime Garcia. I mean, the guy's pitched 8 innings in his last 2 starts. Mm-hmm. he's pitched more than 6 innings like 3 times this whole season. If safety is your thing, there's merit to playing Jaime Garcia in certain formats, but if safety is your thing, I don't know how you don't go John Lester, if you're just putting those guys heads up against each other. Yeah, Lester's had some weird ones recently, too. Notably at the beginning of the month with those 2 disaster starts against the Pirates and Mets, but he's bounced back since then. I think he's the guy. Although, again, I'm not feeling great about him either.
I didn't mean them as like apples-to-apples comparisons either, but it was just mostly that they're both up there in the money line is going to help inform some of their the system is going to like them, especially Garcia at 7,800. So I don't know.
To be clear, the money line is specifically influencing their likelihood of getting the win, right? Which is
correct.
A huge deal on FanDuel in particular.
So. Correct. Right. And so, yeah. And Garcia is one of these guys. He's totally impossible. If you roster him on DFS, you just cannot watch the game, right? Like you'll do yourself a huge disservice by watching the game because one, he's one of the kings of work an 0-2 count to a 3-2 count, guys. Like, just like clockwork. There's a couple pitchers like this. I don't know, maybe I probably just notice it more when I...
It's armchair analysis with Doug Norrie. Garcia leading the league this year, 0-2 to 3-2 counts. no source here, just my eyeball test. I watch a few Garcia starts.
That's really what it was. It was like, I wasn't planning on sourcing that at all, and I wasn't planning on looking it up, and I wasn't planning on doing anything
about
it. I
feel like we're at a 4th of July barbecue with your in-laws. That was great.
Or like me trying to discuss LeBron with the guy at a party the other night. Where I was like texting, I was like, there's a guy that is insisting to me that LeBron is not the best. I was like, I just can't even deal with it.
LeBron wouldn't even start for the Showtime Lakers.
Oh, yeah. It was basically something like that. I just had to walk away. I had to say thanks, but no thanks, and just like go find someone else to talk to.
He'd be an energy guy off the bench for Russell Celtics.
Right, that stuff. I guess what we're finding here is that at 9:20 Eastern, in the morning. It is very hard to suss out exactly what the cash game play. There might not be.
I think Verlander's it. I mean, really? Take a harder look at Verlander, and I think if again you're just going straight consistency, the Mets stink. That's a good start. A lot of the other guys we've discussed today are not against teams that stink, and he's been really good, averaging seven innings a start. It's more than seven innings a start in his last four. You know, he's pitched in the one teens in terms of pitch count all season long. Nine strikeouts or more in three of the last four starts, and some of those are against teams. One of those, you know, he pitched against Boston in that stretch. So I don't know. If you're looking for safety, just in terms of what you're going to get performance-wise, maybe to get the win, maybe you don't, but he looks really good.
So here's the thing that always strikes me is, and I'm sure there's like some kind of quantitative way to understand safety in at least coming out of our, if I'm using our projections as sort of the truth when it comes to just knowing what to do on a slate, like it's not the truth in the sense that it's 100% accurate, more that like this is the system that we use to, we spent a lot of time building this thing. This is the thing that we use to inform our decisions. And, you know, that's just what we do. So when I'm looking at FanDuel right now, the difference of so right now, Keuchel is coming in the top lineup. I don't think that ends up being the case because I think that's probably a little bullish on him. But point being, it starts with Keuchel, and then it goes the guys that are showing up like in optimal lineups are Keuchel, Snell, Lester, Garcia, and then Verlander. The difference between the top lineup that had Keuchel and all the way down to Verlander is the difference of one total point of projection over, like, out of, like, say, like, in the 130 range. It's, like, around 132 or something like that.
Sure. A 2/3 of a percent difference or something.
Right, from, like, pitcher one to pitcher eight, it looks like. So what do you do? You see you got guys like Felix Hernandez that start to, you know, are we correct on him? I'm not sure. Jameson Taillon, he's another one. These guys are kind of tough to figure out.
Taillon, very interesting guy for big tournaments for me, but that's about it.
So, right. So what do you do with a situation like that? When you see that the difference of like pitcher one to pitcher nine is the difference of maybe, like a point and a half total of projected, of projection. Like,
well, I think that's a good time when you look at it and you just say, you know, the old gut test does have some utility there because there are going to be some contextual factors that, you know, on a subconscious level, you can kind of way, and also just so you don't kill yourself. Like if you're going into that thinking like, oh, Keuchel, I would hate to watch him pitch tonight. This is going to be awful. Man, I really want to play Verlander, you know, or just play, you know, whoever your guy is, John Lester, you know, because baseball is a marathon and not a sprint. And, you know, I know for me, especially when it's super close like that, and I, you know, maybe take like the strict EV play because it's a 0.2 points higher projection, and then it winds up blowing up in my face. Sometimes I'll even like take a whole night off, you know, and that's
And that was the case last night. That was the case last night. We were talking in the chat. We have a chat room up on the site that's free for everybody. People are in there constantly just talking baseball. It's kind of like watching baseball with your friends at this point. There's a nice little community being built where we have a core group of people, and then, you know, some people are jumping in and out sort of all the time. But, you know, that's what I was around before lineup lock at the 7 o'clock for the contest last night, and I was kind of like, you just don't need to play. Like, there's no gun to your. You didn't sign a contract with FanDuel and DraftKings that said, I promise I'll play every night, you know? Like, and.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I don't. This doesn't strike me as that. Like, I was more. The problem with last night was it was just really. The pitching was so, so bad. This is more like. Right. There's a lot of good to a little bit better than good guys, and I just don't. Trying to figure out which one is the top guy.
Yeah, so it's like we're coming up and just rolling a six-sided die and figuring out what's going to happen. Like, it's.
Right.
I don't know. And on nights like that, for me, I know like my style of play, I really value certainty as much as you can get it in baseball, which is to say not at all. But I do value certainty. And so when it's this random, and I know for me, like I'm a pretty good stoic when it comes to not sweating the swings and the losses and whatnot, but I'll sweat them a lot more on a night like tonight when I don't. Because like we've talked about before, we're like, hey, the lineups got buried tonight, but they were great. They were spot on, and what can you do, you know?
Right.
But on a night like tonight, I could see, you know, some guy we don't play being a 40% start and not going well and being like, what was the point?
Well, you know? one of those six or seven pitchers that we mentioned here is going to be good, right? I think so. It would be really something if they were all bad. But when you have, I mean, there are legit like eight guys that you can make pretty strong, though not great, cases for. Like, so it's not like you're looking at Scherzer, Kershaw, you know, and then I don't know, someone else great. I can't think of Syndergaard. Syndergaard is a huge favorite or something. Jose Fernandez. Like, you have these guys, and you're like, well, all these guys are minus 200s. They're all great. They're all like Cy Young Award winner guys. And it's trying to pick out safety that way. This is different. These guys are all in that sort of tier 1A to tier 2 level pitcher, and they're all kind of just strike me as the same. Like, some have a little better money line, like Garcia, but are not as good of a pitcher. Some have a little...
Well, like Lester, Verlander, and Syndergaard are all like the same exact price, basically.
Right. And so, I don't know. So we're spending a lot of time sort of just dancing around this idea that it's sort of like we're hedging with our analysis, because the analysis is sort of just kind of is waffling here and there. But I think it really speaks to what the slate looks like. I'd actually be a little bit more inclined to play on DraftKings, only because I can just play two of these guys, and you can mix and match. So like sometimes when the decisions are closer like this, I actually like DraftKings, because I don't know. I feel like the floor is built in, because you're going to get two of the arms rather than just pushing your chips to the middle with one guy and sort of just, you know, hoping that this is the time that Garcia is able to go seven innings. Well, though he probably won't.
But and on DraftKings too, like, you know, given the more higher variability on pricing, you can get John Lester for like 4,000 less than Verlander, you know?
Right.
So maybe you should just get him then. Like, if it's that close on FanDuel. So yeah, maybe it's a night to play more DraftKings. I will take issue with the waffling concept though, because I think it's just honest analysis. When things are close, like, you're going to give pros and cons of a bunch of things. And, you know, we don't have to be like Colin Cowherd or something where we say, if you don't play John Lester tonight, you're crazy.
Right.
You're giving money. You're not giving money away. You can make a case for a lot of these guys. Just pick a guy and do your best. I don't know.
Yeah, waffling was probably the wrong word. It didn't mean to be like a negative thing. I more meant it that, like, we're just not targeted, zeroed in on something. And then, but that's, like I said, that speaks to it. I hadn't really looked too closely at the DraftKings prices. That this is a good opportunity of where you can take a big advantage of the pricing inefficiency. That price on Verlander was, when we were speaking about Verlander, that was FanDuel only related. 13.6 yes. for Verlander on DraftKings is totally out of bounds. So take that, take all that Verlander analysis from before, transpose it on the draft, excuse me, on the FanDuel, and do not do it for DraftKings. You cannot do it. You cannot pay this price.
Do not play him on DraftKings. Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. And Garcia, another guy to look at on DraftKings, under 7,000. So,
well, another guy like that is Felix Hernandez. Felix Hernandez is 8,400. Like, Felix Hernandez, like the real Felix Hernandez, is probably like an 11 to 11.5 pitcher. He's 8,400. And so I know he's come off the DL stint.
Yeah, the injury thing, I don't know, man.
Our system's going to have a hard time with that, right? So it's going to have a hard time. It's going to see Felix Hernandez, and it's going to see basically his pedigree and some historical stuff with him, and even some outward projection stuff that he doesn't even need to be. He doesn't need to be old Felix Hernandez to be good, to be a good play at 8,400. So that is going to, it's going to be hard for.
Well, I mean, he just without getting a win, he just scored more than 18 points against the Cubs, right? So we're projecting him for 18 points exactly against the Angels in Seattle. So, like, that's not out of bounds.
And the other thing, too, is, well, if Trout sat out yesterday, although I was looking up real quick why he sat out, it was only a cold. So I suspect he plays again tonight. I was going to see if he were to sit again, that line would probably shift even more in Hernandez's favor. But it being a cold strikes me as he's probably going to play again. So I'll forget that part of it. All right, so I guess our final thing with pitchers here is it is all very, very close. There are, I would say there's lots of positives for a lot of pitchers, and then there's a few negatives that equal them all out in the end. More than I was going to say, like, it's not all just equally positive and negative. I think there's like a lot of guys that look pretty good to me, and that I just can't, I'm just having trouble figuring out which one of those climbs all the way to the top. I think some of it will, again, the lines will shift from now till 7 o'clock, so that's going to change things a little bit. And then we'll dive deeper into the projections and make sure everyone is sort of correct. Like, we were like this on Bauer. Like, the system was high on Bauer the other night. Thankfully, we went in there and looked and said, you know, I don't know, maybe all these inputs can be shifted a little bit on him. That's not telling the whole tale. And it gets him out of there right before he gets lit up. I'm not saying that process is going to work every time, but we will spend some time digging deeper on some of these guys and see if one of them rises to the top. All right. So we've come to really no conclusions about pitchers, and
yep,
now we're
you're
on.
Welcome.
So there you go, everybody. 19 minutes of us just kind of saying everybody and nobody all at once. That's really
everyone's good and nobody's back.
That's how you. That is how you start a content site. You just sort of just throw a bunch of stuff out there and just say, "Well, I know Verlander got beat up. I know Verlander got beat up, but I don't think I called him a must play. We just said this is one of some of the reasons."
Yeah, I mean, we listed 20 guys. We had 20 elite plays and 9 okay plays.
Yeah, the real secret to content is hedging. So hedging in what you're saying, right?
Okay, except we don't do that as much.
No, we don't.
Anyway,
I don't think we do. I don't think we do at all. Well, actually, it's funny because we actually don't do even the slightest because we just put our projection for every single guy up there. So it's actually the very opposite. Like, we'll write guys
right,
up.
You can just look at it and figure out.
Right, exactly. Like, we can't. There's nothing to hide. There's really no. There's no narrative to hide behind. We just have the numbers for the guy, and they either work or they don't. Anyway, so let's talk. Okay, we have so many interesting offensive situations going on tonight. Mm. The start is the big one. We'll just start here.
I have a big sleep before you even get started. The Rockies and Marlins today.
Whoa.
11 and a half run line.
Off board. Wow. Nice. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say, obviously, the Marlins go into Coors, face a lefty. Stanton and Ozuna sit in the middle of the lineup. Is this where you kind of start all of your thought process, the game in Coors?
Yeah, of course. I don't see any reason not to. And especially, like, I don't know. Tell me how you feel about this, but I feel like they haven't been adjusting quite as much or possibly in the right ways on the Coors games recently. I don't really know why, but yeah, Ozuna at 3,700.
That's stupid.
You can justify that price against a lefty just in a park neutral environment. I mean, in Coors, it seems ridiculous.
The Ozuna price is wrong. So I would love to know what, okay, first of all, these algorithms that like FanDuel and DraftKings have are not a guy sitting at, you know, it's not a guy sitting with his calculator and trying to, and today 4,800 for Stanton. And what should I do in Ozuna? It's like, you know, it's built into a database that automatically pumps it out. That being said, I have no idea what went wrong here with the Ozuna price. Like, Ozuna at 3,700 is just basically just an easy play on FanDuel. Like, I don't really know why that seems so low to me.
Keep in mind that FanDuel's goals are different than our goals in putting out projections, right? So, like, you know, they go on not. Based on my observations and people I've talked to, whatever, they go on not just how the guy's performed, but they will go on his historical performance, but also and perhaps primarily they go on what their player's perception of him is, right? So if like people just don't play Ozuna for whatever reason for some given stretch of time, like you can see his price tick down, or if he plays all the time, then you can see the price tick upward. That's, you know, just me armchairing it, totally guessing, but it must have something to do with that because there's no performance-based reason, especially given that the sites are more reactive than I would generally want to be, right?
100%.
I mean, especially for baseball. Like, you can look at a guy, I mean, we'll talk about Bryce Harper maybe in a little bit, but you can look at a guy like Bryce Harper and say, well, he hasn't been the same guy this year. And again, we'll talk about that, but with Ozuna, he's just been great this year. So I don't know what you want the guy to do. He's got 19 home runs, 429 plate appearances, like crushing lefties. I don't get it.
That's more. It was more just an Ozuna thing, not even a Marlins thing. The rest of the Marlins are all 3,700 or better. Even the bad ones like JT Realmuto, guys like
hey,
that.
Realmuto is not that bad.
He's fine, but right. I guess it was more just like it seems like there was a mistake here with Ozuna, which is fine. We take advantage of it, and you just play him at 3,700. You're not going to spend up enough on any pitcher on FanDuel that you're going to need to worry about that price. I would play Stanton at 4,800. Frankly, he crushes lefties. This is the exact situation you want him in. I would probably play him up into over 5,000 only because this is, again, the raw point expectation on him is about as high as you're going to ever see a guy going into a game, right? We have him at 15.86 points right now for our FanDuel projection. That I can't remember. I think like maybe there was a couple Arenado games that were against the lefty where the Rockies were just figuring to just totally blow a team out, that he was sort of up in that range, but this is about as high as you see a guy. You're not paying enough for pitching that you need to worry about it. I think it's Ozuna and Stanton all day in that outfield. And I probably, you know, you mentioned Harper. It's like you're baiting me. Are you baiting me with Harper, or are you, like, is this something that you wanted to get me fired up about, or are you actually just being for real about Harper? Because it seems like you're trolling me a little bit.
Well, I'm all at once baiting you and making a serious comment about Harper. Like, well, because, you know, we were talking to some chatters and I had to ask you to go take a walk because it was getting a little heated in there. As the administrator of the chat, the moderator, as it were, I had to ask you to take a little time out because because it was getting hot. Well, you actually weren't getting that hot publicly.
Well, I've spent plenty of time.
Right. Because, well, Harper, like he, the only thing different about Bryce Harper this year, and I'm sure you've talked about this on the podcast. I don't listen. I wouldn't know, but
it's okay,
is his BABIP. Everything else, he's the same exact player, except he's smoking line drives into people's gloves instead of into gaps. And I don't get the hate at all.
Like a little, some of the, like I've said before, some of it is shift responsible. So like they do overshift him.
They've always shifted against him though. Like,
he insists on pulling the ball. He doesn't go. But anyway, it doesn't insist. It's just part of his makeup is to hit like that. I know he's not like a stubborn.
I'm gonna go pull the ball right now. I'll tell you that much.
Stubborn.
I see all those guys over there.
Stubborn child. Right, but the Harper thing, 3,900 on. 3,900 on a FanDuel is stupid. Like it's that is the other, like I would be shocked right now. Something would really need to happen for me, and I'm not even sure what it would be, for me not to play just Stanton, Harper, Ozuna on FanDuel in the outfield, and then just figure out the rest of the positions as they sort of come in. When hitters especially are coming into optimal lineups now at these price points, it's sort of like a pitcher at the high price point. It takes a lot to get them out. Like it's going to figure out. It'll just make the changes at first base, second base, all the other positions, and this is where it's going to be. Harper is elite. It's a funny thing with DFS. DFS baseball is definitely the most difficult on your emotions from a day-to-day basis, and it really can just totally screw with your thought process. This is why you absolutely have to have some kind of system. It doesn't need to be our system. It just needs to be a system because you can't make gut calls for an entire season on baseball. You will just lose, and Harper's a perfect example. People think because they rostered Harper for an 0-for-4 game, that Harper quote unquote screwed them, right? Like it's a very interesting thought process, which I never really thought I'd encounter as much as we do in baseball. It's like the personal. Someone personally affronted them by going 0-for-4 in a game when it just happens, right? And
sure, and it's just mystical thinking anyway, right? Because like, I mean, you get it both ways, which is kind of insane. You get both the "this guy's due," which is what people say when they want to play a guy but can't justify it based on recent performance. And then you get the, "well, no, he just stinks now." Well, Harper is like 23 years old. He doesn't stink now, that's for sure.
Oh, 100%, so 100% no, he's elite.
Could he be hurt maybe? You know, like there's reasons why player performance can drop off in baseball from time to time. But it really, what it reminds me of, it's just why people are bad at gambling or playing games of skill on the internet in this case.
Right.
But I'll give you a gambling example. It's like when I used to walk around casinos back in the old poker days, and you could walk around the roulette area and you'd look up on any board where it's like six reds in a row, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without fail, we walk up to a table and say, "six reds in a row." And the table might say something like, "well, black is due," or, "yeah, red comes up every time. It's free money." And then you just take the other side and say, "I bet you $100 red comes up again." And they're like, "done."
Right.
And then you just get the odds, the house odds on the roulette thing, getting their even money red black bet, because they don't understand that it doesn't matter what happened the last six times. Like it's what happens next. And yeah, baseball's not roulette and there's, you know, individual human beings over there and all that kind of stuff. But in this case with Harper, it's about as close to, you know, the gambler's fallacy problem as it can be, because he's not getting worse. He's not past his prime. And if you're going to be the one who always plays the guys that are on hot streaks, you're just going to lose. So good luck. That's my
Only thing for Harper, and again, I probably don't need no other player has gotten more pod time and more chat room time for me than Bryce Harper, and it's probably not even close. But the only little concern on him, and this is these stats do normalize pretty quickly, his line drive percentage is down this year sort of significantly from 22% to 15%. So the ground balls are way up.
That'll affect the BABIP, sure.
Right. Well, the other thing that's affecting the BABIP actually is the infield fly ball. And I need to probably source this, but I know I've read that infield fly ball has a significant effect on BABIP, and I just can't remember if that's something that like is luck driven or if it's like a sign of something. Because I remember reading it in relation to Joey Votto that he just like never popped up onto the infield like for his whole career. So that's way up. So that's actually something I'll look a little more closely at. And I just, like I said, I can't remember which way the narrative flips on the infield fly ball, if that is a bad sign or if it's just an unlucky sign. Harper still walks more than he strikes out this year. That is such a great implied floor for him. Anyway, those three, Harper, Ozuna, Stanton, for me on FanDuel all day long, probably a little closer on DraftKings where the price is, like the Ozuna price is way higher on DraftKings. Like it's more in the correct zone for DraftKings than it is for FanDuel.
Side note on Joey Votto.
Go.
just like 2010, he has not hit an infield fly ball this season yet. He has not popped up in the infield.
Oh, you just looked it up? It's crazy. I remember reading that article.
No times this year. Well, 2010 was when that article first came out, and then this year he's done it again so far. Zero. Not yet.
That seems impossible. Like, I don't even know. How do you just not one time? Like, just, like, hit a lazy, like, just, like, check swing or something. That's nuts. Anyway.
It doesn't do it.
Well, good job by me remembering that. So, anyway, so pat myself on the back in the show notes.
Great work, though.
Let's just roll through a couple other teams and good situations.
Because you're going to need to get some value elsewhere, right? If you're going to spend up in outfield, it's going to be hard. One guy who I suspect will just be a chalk play everywhere is Jake Lamb. He's not only got the hot narrative, home runs in his last two games, but also...
And hot-looking narrative, too.
Let's be real here. A fine-looking man.
Yeah, real talk.
But good lefty-righty matchup against Anderson, great park, and ridiculous price on FanDuel as well. The monkey fell asleep with the wheel on his price, too. $2,800 is going to make him just too cheap. Everyone's going to play him. So
the other guy, so I'm totally with you on Lamb. The pricing on FanDuel seems just way, way wrong today on some of these hitters.
Which means maybe we should play, even if we're not feeling great about the pitching or whatever.
Well, that's the case, right? You can do a good amount of cash game play by just basically playing all the same bats and just rotating your pitcher around with maybe a slight change here and there at like first base or catcher or something. The other guy that's in this sort of range of which is the real price is Alex Bregman. So he's... This is another guy that's funny. I never thought I'd have to like write so much or think so much about Alex Bregman when the season started. But okay,
because you didn't know who he was at the season. 100%.
No, I don't really follow prospects that much. but I follow prospects when I need to. Like, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about prospects going into the season, only because it's just not like we have enough inputs that like the system will figure it out when they get called up. You know, so I just don't take a lot of time mentally devoting to. Is this guy in single A going to be good or whatever? But Bregman is obviously a real prospect. They called him up, I don't know, about a week or so ago. He has been awful.
If you can get a guy who gets a hit in 4.5% of his at-bats, like, that's definitely a guy you want to take a hard look at.
Right, so he's bad, but, like, nothing has gone right for him. He's striking out a lot. He's walking some, I guess, 8%. But the thing with him is he's a punt play on FanDuel. He's 2,300, and he hits second. And when you hit second at 2,300, when you have any kind of pedigree, right? Like, I'm not talking like the Alcides Escobars of the world that's for some reason hit up near the top of the lineup. I'm talking about like guys that actually do project to be able to hit. Like, this is a 1,000 OPS guy in the minors. He's a guy that's in the top prospect list. So if they continue to bat him second, and the FanDuel is just going to keep his price at 2,300, which is basically free, I think you can make a case to continue playing them. Like, the Astros are a smart organization, right? They've done a lot of things pretty correctly when it comes to just bringing guys up and sort of building their team from within. And if they're a team that is willing to just continue to hit this guy second, it's not, again, this isn't the Royals or the Nationals, who don't seem to have a clue when it comes to like roster construction or lineup making, but. I don't know. I tend to trust the Astros in this situation, and I trust our numbers too. Like, our numbers are bullish on him because he's supposed to be good. So
yeah, I mean, he hasn't done less than a 370 OBP at any spot along the minors. He obviously flew through their system. 15% walk rate in Double A this year. But you know, sometimes this happens. We do see sometimes even with elite prospects like Trout's first year, called up Pedroia's first year. Like, not everyone comes up and lights the world on fire. But he's also older than what we're used to right now. For some prospects, like, he's 22 and, you know, he's not 20, so.
He's actually 22 years, 4 months, and 6 days, I know you knew that.
No, I know that. March 30th birthday. Right around the birth of my own third son, so.
You have three kids?
A lot to me.
Whoa.
Yeah, you did not know yet? Have you met my third kid yet?
No, someday. Actually, speaking of that,
Four days from now, buddy.
Come on. I was going to say, next week we'll be doing some live podcasts, live in the sense that Wolf James and I will be in the same room as the families get together for the week, so exciting times.
You see Paulie D, Ronnie.
Yeah, little Jersey Shore style. So, anyway, that's my case with for me on FanDuel, at least, it's Bregman and Lamb all day at third base. Those two guys
are going to play both at third base. Now, that I bet you won't see that from a lot of
teams. Yeah, I have like a little hack that I do. Just play multiple guys at the position. It's a little thing. I don't like to mention it too much. Let's just roll through a couple other teams that we can look at. Besides, you know, we said the Marlins, we said the Rockies, we mentioned, you know, Harper. Is there another team that you're sort of honing in on? If I'm looking to build a stacker that I can even go, I don't know, build cash games around?
Well, one team I'm looking at is the Chicago Cubs there, and I've got five good reasons. You ready? Dylan.
How many Chappelle show references did you think you were going to make when we started this?
Like, zero, actually. Although what kind of came to me organically, and I'll be honest, I did come up with the Dylan thing during the break. But
I like that we took a 1 minute break to get our heads wrapped around this, and then you still insisted on clearing your throat as soon as I hit record again.
Buddy, I've been hitting mute to clear my throat for this whole time. No one even knows about it. And I was in the middle of making my big joke, and I didn't.
Where was this when we just took this huge break? Anyway, so walk me through the Cubs real quick so we can get out of here.
Well, there's not a whole lot to walk through, I guess. I mean, it's mostly comes through this Dylan Overton thing. You know, he's a guy who, like, there's a certain kind of prospect who, like, from my estimation, oftentimes just really stinks when they get to the majors, and it winds up being these control-first guys without elite strikeout stuff. And so Overton in the minors was, like, not an abomination, but the whole strategy, like, so, for instance, in 2015, 6.5 K per nine, 2 walks per 9. So you're looking at a guy who's got great control, you know, putting the ball over the plate, but double A hitters just can't punish a pitcher like that the way major league hitters can. So, you know, this year a little bit better, almost 8 Ks per 9, still the elite walk rate, gets up to the majors, and all of a sudden he's like, you know what my plan is? Throw strikes. He's like, good news, I'm just going to hit the ball way over the fence. He's like, oh, okay. Guess I'm going to have to reevaluate this plan. So he's walking more guys. Obviously, no one's striking out because, again, he doesn't strike out anybody. But it's been a true disaster. I mean, more earned runs than innings pitched this year.
Is that bad?
One red flag might be the 4.4 home runs per nine that he's given up so far. In terms of specific guys, I imagine most people know the big names on the Cubs. The one guy who's coming up in a lot of our optimal lineups is Wilson Contreras. You know, still very, very reasonable price on him. Javier Baez, you know, assuming a good spot in the lineup, is also a terrific play, ready lefty there. So,
well, he's in real trouble here because the Cubs are already really good, and even the top of their order guys are the switch hitters like Zobrist and Fowler are much better for their careers against lefties. So Zobrist and Fowler are already good. Now you get them in their better split, and so I think just about everyone in that lineup except for Rizzo is better against lefties. So and Rizzo's, I think I'm almost positive he's like kind of platoon neutral for his career. So Overton is in huge trouble here, and like just having to run that buzzsaw through Fowler, Zobrist, Bryant, Rizzo, and then whoever they decide to play like Baez, like sort of down the bottom of the lineup, Contreras, he could just be dead, or he could just not even see the floor.
And chances are good he won't end his major league career with a 9 ERA. So, like, at some point he's not going to have a terrible game, but it sure doesn't seem like today's that day.
Well, the only issue here for the Cubs is the park downgrade moving to Oakland. So that is not a great park, which is probably the only thing keeping the
red line lower. It's not a huge total here, right? It's like 8.5. Now, granted, most of that's going the Cubs' way since the money line is over 200. But, you know, the Cubs have just destroyed – they're 0.002 WOBA points away from being the best team in the league against left-handed pitching.
Right.
And they've got the second best walk rate in the league against lefties. So this is just going to be a tough one for him.
Yeah. So we have the Cubs there. We have, like I said, the teams before. Any other teams that we're not going to run through the positions at this point, I don't think. If you want like a positional breakdown, just go over and take a look at our projections or take a look at the article that we have.
Sure. Well, there's another team. I mean, we looked at the Cardinals too, but there's a lot of kind of weirdness in the lineup there. So maybe it'd be a good idea to give people a heads up about that.
Yeah. The Cardinals are an interesting team because they've run bad with injuries this year, though they're getting people healthy. It's hard to project the Cardinals early on in the day because they have done so much lineup switching that I sort of have just, because we have to do some baseline projections on guys just to keep things sort of humming early in the day so things don't look too weird near the end. That being said, the Cardinals are one of the more difficult teams to do that with because I just simply don't know who is going to hit leadoff. Like, it might be Greg Garcia, or he could bat eighth, or he could not play. Like Tommy Pham hit leadoff there yesterday, but that was against the lefty. So they get the righty today. I think if I were to guess, I would say they hit Piscotty leadoff the other night. So my overall point is I like the Cardinals a lot. It's just a little hard to know exactly who I like because I just don't know what they're going to do with their lineup. Like, they hit Brandon Moss second the other day, which is great. I mean, that's a phenomenal thing for us because, like, that's a sick value for him. But he could hit second, he could hit fifth, or he could not play. Like, I just don't know. I just don't know. So anyway, the Cardinals as a whole are a great team. This will be something that will bear itself out once their lineup is released, and then we'll have a really, really clear picture. Let's just wrap it up. Any other guys or teams that stand out to you before we kind of call it quits here?
No, I think it's a pretty good picture. I will say that you know, the DraftKings lineups today are a lot different than the FanDuel ones.
Yes.
So if you're listening to this podcast and trying to build your DraftKings lineups, probably a good idea just to grab a 3 free-day trial of the projection system at dfsr.com/membership and, you know, take a look. Because it's just dramatically different with how cheap the pitching is over there. You can spend up at a bunch of positions. So
yeah,
you'll start to get not only just outfield, you can spend up in a lot of spots. So That'd be my big suggestion there.
Yeah, we spent a lot. Yeah, I'm glad you said that because we mostly informed this off FanDuel pricing. All right, that is it for us. Take a look at DFSR.com, DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. We have the picks article, stacks, pitchers, weather, news and updates, and then a free 3-day trial to the projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and so soon, NFL coming. 2 weeks, I'd say we're probably 2 weeks out from having our projections up for NFL. I have a lot of really cool stuff planned for that we're building. Really, really excited to release that, so NFL coming soon. Hey, James, I will see you in person in a couple days, back for the podcast on Monday. Have a good weekend, brother.
Game. Blasters.